This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening, TSN1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek. 2 hours of hockey content for you on this Wednesday evening. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock. Ezra Ginsberg is back from his vacation. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Our guest this evening, Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette, in about 30 minutes' time to talk about tomorrow's Jets-Habs game at MTS Center. And then at the top of the next hour, Slava Malamud, foreign correspondent for Sport Express in Russia, is going to join us to talk about all sorts of rumors buzzing around potentially the return of Ilya Kovalchuk to the NHL. I say, without further ado, good evening to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, how are you both? Were you able to both stay up the late hours, burn the midnight oil, and stay awake for the Monday and Tuesday night late Jets games?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? Able to stay up for sure. It was a disappointing result for the Jets. Didn't get over too late. It was 11:30, but it was certainly late for some people who had to get up earlier. I don't have to get up that early, luckily for work. But, yeah, doing good, Drew. It's going to be an interesting 8 games here. It's amazing. It seems like we've been talking about this playoff push now for longer than a couple months. But it's going to be a dogfight, as we've been saying for a long time here. And it starts tomorrow night versus the Habs. And it continues on Sunday with Chicago. And it's going to be, for me, this is my favorite time of the year, heading into the first round of the playoffs, which is, as we know, the best time in any sport.
You know, Drew, I thought that it's an interesting, it took care of business in Edmonton.
Yeah.
And as they should have, and they did. And you have to give them credit because they've had difficult times against some of those teams. Last night's game, you know, was a disappointment, I think, only because of how well they have been playing. And I thought they didn't play it poor. I thought they played a solid game. The result has to be disappointing just because no matter how well they've played, and they obviously won 5 in a row, it's been so hard to gain any ground in this race. So when you have a 2-0 lead on the road, even though you're going up against another playoff team and you're in their barn and you're in the second half of a back-to-back night, you want to be able to protect that lead. And they lost focus there for the last half of the second period, and that was it.
Yeah, it was really 10 minutes of bad hockey for the Jets. Mm-hmm. And that's really what did them in. I mean, if you look at that game, the first period, you know, Michael Hutchinson had to make some saves, but the Jets were able to jump out to that 2-0 lead at, you know, in the first half of the game there. And it was just those last 10 minutes of the second period where they stopped skating, they stopped moving their legs. The third period, you know, Vancouver wasn't really trying to do much offensively. I thought the Jets couldn't get much going, but I thought
he played a couple opportunities. I thought he played a good game.
Yeah,
but
Eddie Lack had a couple nice saves in the third period.
Yeah, that line moves the puck real nice. I mean, that Stafford, Wheeler, and Scheifele line is skating well. Is passing the puck well? I think you skate faster and you're more assertive when you expect to receive the puck. And I think those guys expect that are always on edge, thinking that they might be part of a play. And I think they're really feeding off of each other. All three of them can shoot the puck. Scheifele especially, but Stafford is a good shot too. And, you know, they were able to create opportunities. Obviously, you get contribution from Tulusti and Stepniak and those guys, but it's just simple breakdowns, guys. And it's really the third goal that you think to yourself, you know, if you're Paul Maurice, you know, it's second half of a back-to-back, you're not going to work over your guys. There's only 8 games left. And I still think overall, 0-60, they played a pretty solid game. But it's that one breakdown there, Ezzy, you know, you end up having your two defensemen against the boards, Stepniak decision. And just overall, you don't ever want your defensemen coupled against the boards like that with opposition players on the other side of them. And Hutchinson left out to dry against the Canucks' best scorer. I mean, Radim Vrbata, and he's been great, is the Canucks' best scorer. Is a really nice signing by Jim Benning in the offseason. So it's tough to lose that game, and you have a tough road, although you're getting a little break without Carey Price tomorrow.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the Habs game coming up in a couple segments, but it is worth noting Dustin Tokarski going to get the start for the Montreal Canadiens tomorrow, not Hart Trophy, Vezina Trophy, you know, potentially future Conn Smythe winner Carey Price, because he's been absolutely dynamic for the Habs this year, and the Jets fortunate to avoid him. as you tell me if you would agree with this statement or not, to me this seemed like the first time in the 9 games that the Jets have been without Dustin Byfuglien and Brian Little that it seemed like they missed their presence more last night than in any of the previous 9 games.
I would disagree with that, but I think what you're talking about here with the Winnipeg Jets, you know, it's tough in this day and age when one loss can really mean a season. And what I mean by that is everything's going well. You've won 5 games in a row. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, LA and Calgary have a game in hand on you, yeah. And you're getting a little bit nervous. And the reason why I, you know, back to your question, Drew, I mean, they beat Tampa without those guys. They beat Nashville without those guys. And again, we talked about this. When you start saying, well, they really miss these guys, well, didn't you miss them against Tampa Bay and Nashville, two of the best teams in the NHL? So as far as the physicality goes, I didn't think it was there. As far as the A game for the Winnipeg Jets, I didn't think it was there. That game could have gone to either team. And the Vancouver Canucks were, I thought, really bad in the first period. They couldn't seem to really generate much offense. But the Winnipeg Jets played well, and you could see, you know, they got a little bit tired. They've played a lot of hockey in the last couple of weeks. But again, it's one game.
Every team's played a lot of hockey.
And everybody's right? played a lot of hockey. So they're not going to use the second game of a back-to-back as an excuse. And Michael Hutchinson didn't have one of his best games, and he struggled. I agree with Richie. Radim Verbata's goal, I don't think you can fault Hutchinson, but you know, Yannick Weber's goal, it's a point shot that it was a little bit of a screen.
Did that hit Trouba or not?
There might have been a deflection,
yeah,
but
I thought it hit Trouba.
You know,
so.
I thought that was a bit of a weak goal.
On that point, Ezzy, the Canucks were moving the puck beautifully on that power play goal.
Yeah.
That, to me, I took a second and think, you know, okay, the Jets are playing a lot more disciplined than they were before, because that ice certainly tilts when you're taking a lot of penalties, which is an obvious statement, but it's true that the Jets have been better. Playing a more disciplined game lately, I think, at least.
Yeah, the numbers would bear that out, too.
And so that's a positive that they're able to, and especially with these injuries. I think your question, Drew, in terms of course, they're always going to feel the effects of having these guys, not having these players in the lineup. But if you're able to make up for it in different ways, such as playing a more disciplined style, not putting yourself on the you know, other team on the man advantage, controlling, you know, shots to the outside for the most part, which they did a nice job against Edmonton with. Obviously, it's Edmonton, so it's easier. But even Vancouver is having trouble penetrating the middle for a while there. I thought their fourth line, Vancouver's fourth line, really got them going a bit with that speed and that pressure on the Jets' back end. And you know, a couple of the Jets' defenders I didn't think had the best games and turned the puck over a little bit too much. Another concern I would have, and I think this leads you back to that Calgary-Winnipeg thing. You know, the Wild have a tough schedule. We'll talk about the schedules.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched Los Angeles play last night against New York Rangers, and it's, whoa.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if you saw the game, but
I saw parts of it. Go ahead.
I watched that game, and LA Kings made the, I said last week, arguably the best team in the league. New York Rangers looked a lot like last year's Stanley Cup final, and LA was on, you know, on a mission, and they dominated for large portions of that game with their size and their best players. That's the thing. Their best players, Andre Kopitar, next level. He's real good. He's really good. Next level with his production. So over the next 8 games, you're going to need to see the Jets, and Blake Wheeler, these guys have been their best guys, but you're going to need to see their best guys take it maybe even to another level for them to make sure they get to the playoffs.
It was a bad out-of-town scoreboard last night. You mentioned LA going into New York and then defeating the Rangers, and then you have the Minnesota Wild, who were really outplayed by the New York Islanders for the majority of that game. I don't know if you guys saw any of that game. The Wild were the Islanders were the better of the two teams significantly throughout that game. The Wild end up getting a late goal, tie it up, send it into overtime. Wild end up winning it in the shootout, because really on the back of Devan Dubnyk yet again playing, you know, this unbelievable otherworldly streak he's on. And you look at that game last night for the Jets' perspective, and you say, okay, the Jets are on the second half of the back-to-back. The Kings are on the second half of back-to-back, albeit not with any travel, given right. that they went from New Jersey to the Rangers. And the Wild are on the second half of a back-to-back as well, given that they played Monday in Toronto. You're thinking, well, the Wild against the Islanders. Well, the Islanders have been a pretty good team.
Yep.
That could be a loss for the Wild. And you're thinking, well, the Kings against the Rangers. Well, the Rangers are one of the best teams in the league. That could be a loss for the Kings. But though both of those teams go into opposing yeah. buildings and take wins you may not have circled as victories mm-hmm. on the schedule for them. Meanwhile, the Jets can't match them. And I'm not criticizing the Jets for it.
I mean, you wouldn't have expected the Jets to beat Tampa Bay and BYU and all
Absolutely.
These teams. So.
But it goes back to your original point, which you were saying. It was, you know, you win 5 in a row and you gain you almost gain nothing. You win five in a row, you lose one game, and you're back to where you were before you won those five games in a row.
That's the way the league is right now.
Yeah, it's just it's an absolute dogfight. I mean, and we'll talk about the schedules going forward. We'll talk about the playoff races going forward next segment.
I guess some people were up in arms about Pavlik not playing last night, Pavlik's been
how great. 2 weeks change everything. It's amazing.
Well, Pavlik, you know, has been really good. I have no issue with Michael Hutchinson playing last night. Do you have an issue with the goals? The first goal he probably wants to have back. But overall, I have no issue with that decision and no issue with his game. You know, you're playing back-to-back. I always think you should be playing both goaltenders. I mean, Minnesota's obviously proven me wrong there, Ezzy, with Dubnyk playing, 33 games in a row. But overall, I think that's usually the best method.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hutchinson was the right decision. I even could have been talked into Hutchinson on Monday, Pavlik on Tuesday.
But yeah, I told you I didn't like that. Yeah. And I'm happy the way they did it that way.
But. Yeah, I mean, the people that are, you know, that are criticizing Paul Maurice for that decision, I mean, that's, you know,
the point was made to me today that, well, you're worried about Pavlik playing back to back. I mean, Dubnyk's played 33 games in a row or whatever it is, and
different goalies.
And Dubnyk also, I mean, and Pavlik did have 3 weeks off there where he hardly played. So I just think it's also, fatigue sure is always a factor, but it's less that than it is. You want to get Hutchinson in the mix here still, because one or two bad games, and, you know, Pavlik's confidence has been fragile. You want to make sure your other guy's ready to go.
I agree with that exactly. Ezzy, your thoughts?
Well, and the day after, it's a moot point because we expect Andre Pavlik to play tomorrow against Montreal. So the decision was made by Paul Maurice, and leading up to the game, you know, you can maybe question that decision. But, you know, again, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer because Andre Pavlik has played really well. So the argument for Pavlik is he's been hot. Keep riding the hot goaltender versus, as Richie said, put Michael Hutchinson in, a goalie who hasn't played a lot, and keep him somewhat fresh, knowing that you're most likely going to play Andre Pavlik in all four of these upcoming home games. I don't think we would be surprised, considering that before next Saturday's Vancouver game, the Jets have 3 days off.
Sure.
So Pavlik's going to be well-rested.
I think it's solely dependent on how they play. Like, if Pavlik gets bombed 5-0 and tomorrow,
yeah.
I don't anticipate that happening, but if it happens,
It
might change again.
That's possible.
Yeah. I think you would, especially given Hutchinson's success so far this year against, you know, Andre Pavlik is the number one goalie right now, or he was for that five-game stretch when he was playing unbelievably. But, you know, if he struggles tomorrow, it would not surprise me to see Hutchinson on Sunday against the Chicago Blackhawks, a team he's had a fair deal of success against this year. But then again, if Pavlik is what, you know, he has been for the last five games, you know, you'll ride him. Paul Maurice is in the business run. He's just going to ride the guy that's giving him the best results.
And that's the way it should be. History of Carolina riding some of his top goaltenders. So
yeah, there was somebody mentioned, I don't remember exactly what the number was, but he rode Archer Zerbe for 30 some odd games in a row back in when he was Carolina's head coach and Zerbe was in the net there. So he's going to ride the hot hand because, you know, he doesn't have any room for error. The team doesn't have any room for error to make it into the Western Conference playoffs.
But that decision alone was not why they lost the game.
Absolutely
not. Right? So, and if anybody thinks that, I mean, Michael Hutchinson's struggling. But, you know, Michael Hutchinson was excellent for the majority of the season. Post All-Star break, he hasn't been good. And Pavlik is good. And I think, you know, Drew, you mentioned the number one goalie. But it's, as Richie said, it's not really about the title number one goalie. It's about who's getting the majority of starts based on how well they're playing short term. Or, you know, what have you done for me lately type of thing. And Andre Pavlik with the shutout against Edmonton and how, you know, he was NHL first star of the week.
Sure.
He's been incredible the last two or so weeks. So, again, you make the decision. Maybe if Pavlik doesn't play well, which he's been very good as of late, and there's no reason to expect that he'll let in more than a couple goals against Montreal, maybe you make the decision to start Hutchinson because he's been so good in the United Center against Chicago. So, but, you know, Hutchinson, that game, just it was one game. It was one loss. They made themselves, able to have that loss based on the five wins they had. So, you know, the goaltending is the least of the concerns right now.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Western Conference playoff race. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on this Wednesday, the 25th of March. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouthguard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
You know who needed a dentist the other night?
Blake Wheeler.
Did he get a root canal?
Yeah, that's what they said. A couple root canals later, he was okay to play on Tuesday night. It was actually, we got a couple funny tweets. Odd Man Rush Winnipeg on Twitter tweeted at us and said, "His face! His beautiful, beautiful face!"
You know, Wheeler was super tough about that. He took a puck in the mouth and he was bleeding. He got right up, went off the ice. He was good to go last night.
As there was any doubt, he's a hockey player in the midst of a playoff race. He wasn't going to miss any more minutes of that game than he had to. And the Warrior mentality certainly played out on Monday night in Edmonton.
He was mixing it up yesterday. There was a couple plays after the whistle. Wheeler's wearing the full cage. It looked like he was back in American college, Richie.
Minnesota.
Yeah, and if this had been any one of the rec leagues in the city or anywhere, they would have said, "Well, take off that birdcage and say that to me." But I don't think they do that in the NHL. I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. Anyways, let's look at the playoff races in the we'll start with the Western Conference. That's the one, of course, of the most interest to us here in Winnipeg. The Jets now holding down that second wild card spot, only 2 points ahead of the Los Angeles Kings. The Kings with that game in hand.
And the Flames.
And the Flames, who are currently third in the Pacific Division, also 2 points behind the Jets, also with the game in hand. I believe they have Dallas tonight, if I'm not mistaken. Minnesota
they
Wild,
do.
3 points up on the Jets now, combined with their victory in New York last night against the Islanders and the Jets' defeat in Vancouver. It seems like Vancouver is pretty home and cooled, I think, as well as at this point.
I mean, that changes over two games, so.
I know, but
I don't know anybody's home and cool. I'm not saying anything anymore. Nobody's home and cool. I mean, this changes so quickly.
Well, it looks like Ezzy and I were right to when we wrote off the Boston Bruins a couple
you can't write them off.
Unless you're like in the Eastern Conference and you're talking about some of the top teams like Montreal and the Rangers, they're obviously making the playoffs. It's just a matter of where they're seated. But, Richie, in the Western Conference here, for me, you know, you mentioned in the first segment, you know, the Jets haven't been able to really gain any ground. Basically, the Jets are locked into a wild card spot. I mean, they could pass, in theory, one of the teams in the Central Division, but
that ain't happening.
That's very unlikely based on just the percentages of likelihood of that happening. So, to me, you're holding on to a spot, Rich, and you're hoping that the LA Kings don't catch you. And they have that game in hand. They also have more regulation wins, which is the tiebreaker.
Everybody has more regulation wins, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Overtime wins.
So, when you're talking about LA, they got the Islanders. They've got three more road games here coming up against the Islanders, the Wild, and the Hawks.
Yeah.
That's not going to be easy for the LA Kings. So,
but if they play,
that's the thing. If it depends which Kings are showing up. Is it the Kings that lost on Saturday to the Vancouver Canucks, or is it the Kings that went into the Madison Square Garden last night and dominated the New York Rangers?
Or is it the Kings that we saw at the MTS Center on March 1st and the Jets handled pretty easily? Like they've got Mike Richards back, and that's great. But you know, to me, this team has been pretty one-dimensional as far as the... Like, Jeff Carter is having an excellent season. I know Richie's a big fan of Jeff Carter. He's doing great. Tyler Toffoli has had stretches where he's been good, and he's struggled. And, you know, Andrzej Kopitar is obviously the leader of that team. You know what you're going to get from him night in and night out. As Richie mentioned, this is a guy who, again, could be a Frank Selke candidate, right? So the LA Kings have just really been really helter-skelter this year, and... You know, they could easily go in into Long Island and win a game, and they could even upset the Wild and the Hawks and win another three games here. But you know, they're going to have to hope that the Jets falter or the Calgary Flames falter. And that hasn't happened. Well, so you look at the Jets, Richie, haven't been able to make up any ground. Neither of the Kings.
I think the Flames and the Wild have the hardest schedules here.
Yeah,
and I think the Kings. You know, the schedule's not easy, but the Kings to me are it.
You think the Flames and the Wild?
Yeah.
Harder than the Jets, or not taking the Jets out of the equation?
I mean, just as hard as the Jets. The Flames have the Dallas. Flames have probably a little bit of easier schedule, but they play more road games. So if you want to balance that out.
Yeah, the Kings, I mean, they have six on the road, but they also, they have...
Talking about the Kings or the Flames?
I'm talking about the Flames. I'm surprised you said that you think the Flames have a harder schedule than the Jets.
Well, when you take into account the road, I think it's pretty even.
Flames also have their next five games against the Central Division.
Yeah, I don't think it's easy. I mean, the Wild's schedule is probably the hardest of them all. But
It's certainly not easy. I mean, what I'm looking at is the Los Angeles Kings' next three games. Because after these next three games where they play the Islanders, the Wild, and the Blackhawks, after that, their schedule's pretty soft. Edmonton, Colorado, they have fine at Vancouver, but, I mean, you can toss that coin in the air if the Kings are going at that point in time. At Edmonton again, at Calgary, home to San Jose. To me, that's, the final six games for the Kings are relatively soft. The Jets schedule, I think, is harder than that, and the Wild schedule definitely...
I think the Kings, like that's what I said, I think the Wild and the Flames, I was taking the Jets out of that equation for a second.
Yep.
And comparing with the Kings, really, there's those four teams. I mean, you could say Vancouver, too. And Vancouver's schedule isn't... Well, they play Colorado and Dallas coming up, so it's not... The Jets don't really have any freebies anymore. I mean, the only real bad team they're playing is Colorado, and Colorado's actually been playing pretty well.
Yeah, Colorado's still...
6-3-1, they're not us 10, so...
Colorado would say that they're still in the race. I mean, they're realistically not, but they would like to motivate themselves with that.
No, Colorado and Dallas aren't mathematically eliminated, but they're not making the playoffs. They're stuck in between the bottom feeders that are in the Eichel McDavid sweepstakes and the playoff teams.
That's right.
So, I mean, what are they supposed to do? They're obviously going to try to win games.
Sure, they like to play. They're in the position to play spoiler.
Yeah.
I mean, 100% they're in that position because you're right. They're not bad enough that they're a Buffalo or a Toronto or Arizona.
Those are dangerous games, guys. And I mean, we saw the Arizona Coyotes yesterday beat the Detroit Red Wings. So it's not like you go into any of these games thinking that it's just give me the 2 points. I mean, unless the Oilers. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
That's a really bad hockey team.
The Oilers are pretty bad. I mean, a lot of these teams. We talked about it. I mean, so many of these teams are the same. These games are just 2-1, 3-2 chess matches. Like, I've put it this way. We're talking about season storylines. This has been one of the worst seasons of hockey I've seen in a long time.
Well, if you look... I think my
personal opinion is it's been one of the worst seasons of hockey-wise.
Just a second, to get off, go on a tangent here.
Oh, good.
Rich, I got to give Rich credit. I mean, he has been saying this for a while. And, I mean, is that not conducive... To how unpredictable the rest of the playoff race has been.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I mean, you have teams that a month ago you didn't think had any chance of making the playoffs, and namely Ottawa.
And Minnesota, both.
And Minnesota even, I mean, they've played well for the last couple months.
Sure, sure.
You know, what are they, 17-2-2 or whatever it is?
It's some ridiculous number. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's ridiculous. But, I mean, you're seeing the quality of play, and I mean, that translates to the lack of – good unrestricted free agents that are coming up in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen a lot of 6 and 7 year contract extensions to players that you don't want in the unrestricted free agency market. So you're in a situation where you have 4 or 5 really bad teams, and then the rest are basically competing. You have 24 teams competing for a playoff spot.
Look at the Art Ross race if you want to see why it's been a lousy year of hockey. I mean, the Art Ross race is pretty much all you need to know. Somebody's going to win it.
With 85 points.
I don't even think they're going to get to 85 points.
Yeah, I thought 90 might be if one of those guys would turn it on over the last 15-10 games. But
well, I mean, Tavares and Crosby right now are... I mean, Crosby's is still over a point a game because he's missed he's missed a few games. But Tavares right now is 74 games played, 74 points.
Well, I think the quality of hockey is very poor right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly due to the obsession of defense with coaching. And I understand these guys want to keep their jobs. I mean, you don't need any more teams, obviously. And we've said that on the show many times before. There's a mobility that the players didn't have before, and I think allows them to get into the lanes. I don't think they think of the game any better than the guys used to. They probably think it worse, in my opinion. But they're able to get in the way and get into lanes and take coaching, in terms of, okay, go there, and this is what you do all the time, and take the fluidity out of the game, I think. And... you see that all the time. I mean, you see guys coming on 2-on-2s and put the puck in the corner. I mean, it's not aesthetically appealing. And I think overall, we're seeing all these races and we're seeing these teams night to night. But I don't think the quality of the game, if you take a step back, I don't think the quality of the game is very good. You're not seeing a lot of playmaking. You're not seeing a lot of scoring. We spoke about the fact on previous shows too that there aren't many. Scores. We're talking about the Art Ross with 85 points. That's laughable. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I don't even think it gets that high. But you're right. Your point
could be 80 points.
Yeah. I mean, the way the way things are going.
Think about
right now.
That, guys. Think about the way the game is going. And what are we talking about? Sticks down in the defensive zone to create offense. What about looking at it a bigger picture? I think there's a lot of ways to, there's a lot of discussion to be had about making the game better, because you look at, I said this in the show a couple weeks ago, look at football, you look at basketball, you look at baseball, they're looking at ways to improve offense.
Sure.
And the NHL doesn't seem to be doing enough.
Well, you saw that a lot after the first lockout, or I guess the second lockout in 2004, Richie, with, you know, they brought in, you know, take out the clutching and grabbing. You know, that's almost 12 years ago now, 11 years ago. And that was really a big part of it, because, you know, you saw previous to that the New Jersey Devils and the Dallas Stars and those teams that would just clog the neutral zone up and all of that. And then obviously the shootout came in, and penalties have been called more often. But what Richie's talking about really, I think, is more coaching, and it's not necessarily – I mean, I think too, and I think, you know, it's an interesting question to ask to Slava Malamud, who we have coming up here. I mean, also there's less Russian players in the NHL, and because they've been in the KHL, and it's possible that more of the players that were playing in the KHL because of the collapse of the ruble, and that there might be some teams that aren't there. But I mean, when you're talking Russian hockey, I mean, going back to the 70s, that was the whole thing with the Summit Series. You know, just a little history lesson here. I mean, that's what surprised the Canadians that much, how skilled the Russians were. And, you know, Richie mentioned something that Igor Larionov wrote about for Players Tribune, in that, you know, the reason why, you know, Larionov and Fedorov, Kozlov, all these guys, the reason why they were really so impressive for all those years with the Detroit Red Wings is because they played so well and they hung on to the puck and they made creative plays, and it was tough to defend against them. And that's what they stressed. And as Richie said, nowadays, it's really about get the win however you can. If you can get it 2-1, if you can get it 1-0, walk it down, don't make any mistakes, wait for a turnover. And oftentimes, those aren't the most exciting games.
And the point system is either way, the point system, the way it works, you know, you get your point by not doing anything right there. If you get no points for going to overtime,
sure,
that'd be different. If you get 3 points for the win, maybe these teams would change it up a bit. I don't want to have to see an illegal defense in the hockey where you have too many guys in the house in the front of the net, five guys there, you get a penalty. I don't want to have to see a penalty for zone defense. I mean, in reality, these are things that the NBA use for periods of time. They've gone back, but periods of time to create offense. And the NHL at some point might have to look at this if your leading scorer is a point a game. I mean,
yeah. Hasn't been a great year for hockey.
No, it really hasn't. I mean,
I don't think it hasn't been a great year for hockey. I think it just hasn't been the best year for offensive. I mean, there's tons of good stories this year. I mean,
we already
talked about Andrew Hammond and Devin Dubnyk.
I'm talking quality of play,
right,
on the
but
ice.
I wouldn't go as far as to say it's just a bad year for hockey.
No,
I mean,
no,
you got Connor McDavid tearing it up.
The quality of hockey is all I'm saying.
Sure.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL Midweek. We are live on TSN 1290. Follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve, Facebook.com/Legal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Montreal Gazette, Pat Hickey. Pat, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Good evening. My pleasure.
Pat, obviously brought you on to talk about the Habs. They're in town already playing against the Jets tomorrow evening at MTS Center. And if you look at the top of the NHL's standings, sort them by the league in total, and the Montreal Canadiens are the first to 100 points and are currently in the driver's seat for the President's Trophy. Do you think is the team putting any weight on that in the dressing room, or are they squarely focused on, you know, getting into the playoffs healthy, getting in the right, you know, hopefully getting the right matchup, or is there some extra weight on winning the entire league's regular season?
Yeah, I think that if they won the President's Trophy, it would be a bonus. I think the main thing is to try to get home ice advantage for as long as they can during the Eastern Conference playoffs. They say they're not concerned about matchups. I think there are a few teams that they would feel nervous about playing in the first round of the playoffs. Tampa Bay would be on top of that list. But, you know, I don't think that they're going to be jockeying for position to avoid any teams.
Pat, Habs coach Michel Therrien announced that Dustin Tokarski is going to get the start tomorrow night versus the Jets, which I guess surprised a few Jets fans and maybe relieved a few Jets fans in the process. But was that decision made just to give Carey Price a rest, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple of things that went into it. I think one, Michel, after practice today, talking, said that, that was one of the main factors. The fact that Tokarski is from Saskatchewan, he's going to have some family and friends here. I think that was went into the mix a little bit, but I think the main thing was just trying to figure out, keep Carey healthy. He's been injured the last 2 years in the playoffs, and I think the key is to not work him too much. And there'll be at least one other game where they have a back-to-back situation coming up. And Tokarski will get one of those starts as well, and that'll give Carey six of the last eight starts.
Pat, do you think, is Carey winning the Hart this year?
I think he's definitely in the mix. I think it'll be very difficult to overlook him. Any of the voters, you look at this team night in and night out. You look at the fact that the Canadians, I think, are 25th or 26th in goals scored, and they're in first place overall in the league. You have to think that it's because they have a pretty good defense, pretty good goaltender. And so I think that if you look at the Hart designation as the player most valuable to his team, and it would certainly be, the Canadians certainly wouldn't be in first place if it wasn't for Carey Price.
You know, you've seen his maturation, Pat, and you look at Carey Price and remember the Halak Price comparison years ago, and the team needing to choose and obviously trading Halak for Lars Eller. How have you seen his game change and his demeanor change, if at all, over the course of that past 5-6 years?
Well, I don't think his demeanor has changed at all. He's still pretty low-key. It doesn't look like anything bothers him. There have been complaints over the years that he doesn't show any emotion, but I think that's one of his strengths, the fact that, he's totally focused out there, doesn't let anything bother him. I remember earlier in my career watching Patrick Waugh. And when Patrick would give up an easy goal, the key was to shoot on him right away because he let it bother him a lot. That was one of the few flaws in his game. And but Carey, if he lets in a goal, well, it's just one of those things that happens. He doesn't let it. He doesn't show any emotion one way or the other. And although we have seen him in practice occasionally break sticks, get a little fired up. But you see less and less of that as he gets older. He's just totally focused out there. I think one of the things that's helped them is having Stefan Waite as a coach the last couple of years, though. And Stefan's been able to take the raw talent that's there and just refine it and make Carey work a little harder than he might have earlier in his career. And focus his workout so that the concentration is not wasting any energy.
Pat, you talk about Stefan Waite. That's a factor, as you mentioned, a huge factor. Was the Olympic performance, and granted, he wasn't tested a ton at the Olympics, but was the fact that he performed so well, nonetheless, at such a high level? With granted, there's tons of pressure in Montreal, but on the world stage, is that a factor as well?
Well, I think it was a factor, and I would question the suggestion that he wasn't tested. There's a lot of people saying, anybody could have won in front of that lineup. You look at the way they played. They won a 1-0 semifinal against the United States. Mm-hmm. They had a 2-1 game against Latvia in the quarterfinals. They had a fairly easy time against Sweden in the finals. It was still a 3-0 game. But, when you play with that, small margin of victory. That team was designed not to let the other team score.
Right.
And I think there was a lot of pressure on Price. And, any time that you're defending a 1-0 lead, you've got to be at the top of your game. Now, the Canadian team did have the puck an awful lot, even though they only scored one goal, for example, in that United States game. But still, it was a, you know, an incredible amount of pressure on them. And I think that was one of the things, Carey, you know, the knock against him is he hasn't won big games. Well, you know, he won a World Junior title, which included a semifinal overtime victory over the United States. He won the Olympic gold medal. He won the Calder Trophy. 19 years old, he won the American Hockey League Most Valuable Player in the playoffs. So, you know, he's played lots of big games, and he's performed pretty well in them.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. Pat, wanted to ask you about a player that the Habs acquired at the trade deadline. They got him from Edmonton in exchange for a couple second-round picks. A second-round pick and a fifth-round pick. That's Jeff Petrie. How has he fit into the Habs back end since coming over early in March?
Well, he's fit in very well. You know, there have been nights when he's been the Canadiens' best defenseman. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see whether they're able to sign him and then keep him in Montreal. It's going to take a pretty good term and some pretty good dollars to do it. But here's a guy who plays both ends of the ice, not the offensive threat that P.K. Subban is, but a guy who can go out there and play on the power play if you need him. Moves the puck very well, a very good skater, and also, you know, it provides them with a little bit of a physical dimension that, you know, that a lot of the defensemen just don't have. You have him out there with Alexei Yemelin, and you've got two guys who are hit, two guys that make it, difficult to get across the blue line without having to look up. And, you know, that's something that they've been missing. Markov and Subban are both, you know, really superior defensemen, but neither one of them really makes it difficult. You know, Subban occasionally will throw that hip check, but it's not one of the things you really worry about getting roughed up by those guys.
Pat, another player that the Jets fans are going to see tomorrow night, and we were talking about him, a couple of weeks back. Subject of controversy with his agent, Alan Walsh, tweeting about his healthy scratch. That's P.A. Parenteau. He was a healthy scratch quite a bit back in February, but he started to play a little bit better. Is he one of those players that the Habs are really going to need down the stretch and in the playoffs? Because this is a guy that's put up 20 goals in the NHL before.
Yeah, very definitely. You know, he wasn't actually a healthy scratch. He had a concussion on January 2nd, I believe. He came back after two or three weeks. He came back before he really should have. You know, there was a lot of talk about a second concussion. Actually, it was just the first concussion. It was the same one, and he just wasn't ready. He got a minor hit, and nothing that would normally be a problem. But he went down with that, and then they were in a situation where they took their time bringing him back. I think he played one game, and then they felt that he still wasn't completely there. Now, in the last seven games, he's picked up four assists. He's playing much better. He's back on the second line. After coming back, he started out on the third or fourth line, and he's been moving up because he's been playing very well there. He's a guy they picked up, during the off season with the idea of having him play as a top six forward. And he's had some ups and downs this year, but it looks like that's where he's going to be heading into the playoffs.
Last question for you, Pat. The Habs are playing a young player now that maybe people aren't familiar with. Frankly, I'm not overly familiar with him, and that's Jacob DeLaRose. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about his game and how he's performed through the first 25 games of his career?
Yeah, he's performed very well. He's a bit of a surprise. Michel Therrien has this reputation for not liking young players, bringing them along slowly, not giving them opportunities. But DeLaRose came up that he was playing at center. He's a big guy. He's got size. He's only 19 years old. But he's played very well. Now, we haven't seen an awful lot of offense from him. But one of the keys to understanding how well he's made the adjustment is that if you're in a close game, you look out there at the end of the game and he's taking a regular shift. Kerrion likes the idea that he's defensively responsible. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He compares them to Jordan Staal, who Michel Therrien coached when he was a rookie in Pittsburgh. So that's pretty high praise, and he's very happy with the way this young man's been playing.
Pat Hickey covers the Montreal Canadiens for the Montreal Gazette. He's a frequent guest here on this program. Pat, thanks very much for doing this, and enjoy the game tomorrow evening.
Anytime, guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks very much, Pat. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Pat Hickey for joining us. In case you missed it, it will be available for download on iTunes or on our website, IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Ezzy, you're pointing at me feverishly.
Well, any time that you read the Bernstein's ad, I just think you're going to like produce some food, so I get excited and I start like wagging my tail like a dog. But I have an interesting question for you guys.
Hang on. It's more interesting than you wagging your tail like a dog?
Let me ask the question here, because it's an important one. Hustler and I have had this discussion many times before, and my answer to this question was Bernstein's Deli. If you could go to one place and have all of your meals at one place, so we're talking breakfast, lunch, dinner, for me it would be Bernstein's Deli. Like, I could eat every single meal there 7 days a week.
Well, they certainly have. I would agree with you, because you have your breakfast offerings.
Yep.
You have all of your assorted egg dishes and breakfast and omelets and whatnot. You have your lunch meats if you prefer that sort of thing. You know, where you can get your turkey sandwiches,
yep,
or your corned beef sandwiches. And then they have the dinner offerings if you like something a little bit heartier. They have all your burgers and fries and things of that nature. So I do appreciate your choice there.
And you can even have the thing is
salad too, of course.
Yeah, for me. I don't really like salad.
I know you don't like salad.
But for me, the option of having breakfast for dinner, I'm a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. Like, I like to have like a stack of pancakes for dinner. Uh-huh. There's nothing wrong with that to me.
No, you actually stack up all your food. I believe you're going to have a stack of bacon for dinner after the show.
Mm.
Now we're talking. Let's talk about tomorrow night's Jets-Habs game in Winnipeg, the first of three straight games for the Jets against original six opponents, Montreal on Thursday, Chicago on Sunday evening, and then the New York Rangers next Tuesday. Habs are first in the NHL. You look at their numbers, though. Aside from goals against, which is speaks to Carey Price,
yep,
their offense 22nd in the NHL, their power play 26th in the NHL. Is this team just strictly Carey Price or bust?
No, and I'll tell you why. I think the Montreal Canadiens this year have clearly had trouble scoring goals, Drew, and the power play has been a major cause of concern for Michel Therrien and the coaching staff. But Max Pacioretty, he could get 40 goals this year, and PK Subban's having a very quiet year. He's fifth in the NHL in defenseman scoring, but it seems to many that he's fallen off as an elite defenseman. PK Subban's an elite defenseman. This team is still very good, and you guys know I'm a big Brendan Gallagher fan, and a guy like Alex Galchenyuk, even though he's maybe not putting up first line numbers, Richie, he's a really mm-hmm. talented player. To me, when you talk about teams that you don't want to play in the playoffs, I wouldn't want to play the Montreal Canadiens. Drew, Carey Price to me over the last, I would say, 3 or 4 weeks or so, it's not even close. I think he's the Hart Trophy winner this year. I mean, this guy has really taken, to me, he's taken, I guess, the mantle away from Marty Brodeur. He's the best goalie in the NHL. And that's no offense to Pekka Rinne. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pekka Rinne has been incredible this year. But Carey Price, I mean, you watch him, 9 shutouts. I mean, as Richie said last week, look at his numbers. Like, mm-hmm. goals against under 2, save percentage, whatever it is, 940. It's really the story of the year to me. He's the MVP. But this team has a lot of players that can hurt you. And I think, getting a guy like Jeff Petrie was really kind of to make you better defensively, because this team, even though they're really good defensively, in previous years they've had that veteran presence, and that's why they went out and got Jeff Petrie. But to me, they have a lot of weapons. They're still small up the middle, Richie, a little bit.
They have been for years.
But this is still a team that's very highly skilled, and I know that the advanced stats crowd, you look at their Team Corsi and Team Fenwick, it's bad, and the justification for that has been, well, Carey Price can't stay this hot. Carey Price has been hot now for 3 or 4 years. And I think once some of these guys like Gallagher and Galchenyuk and David Desharnais, and as we talked about, Plekanec and Pacioretty, who have been their top scorers this year, get going, I wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs, Rich.
I think the first thing you look at when you look at the Habs is, okay, you know, they get outshot and all that, and that's which is true. I said it, I think it was on last week's show. I mean, why is the team continuing to apologize for good goaltending? I mean, they consider him to be a top five National Hockey League goaltender. They paid him big money to be their goalie for the long term, and now are relying on him, maybe at times more so than they wish they did, but they are relying on him to be that guy. So this is kind of like Buffalo apologizing for Dominic Hasek being this dominant netminder in the late 90s, early 2000s. Well, they knew they had a dominant netminder. Maybe they built their team somewhat based upon that fact. So I think people are looking at it, you know, not taking a big picture view of the way Mark Bergevin is building that squad. And again, you know, you could say, well, no team wants to build that they're getting outshot like that. I appreciate that. And I don't think that's the intention long term. But looking at the squad as it is now, well, you know, they didn't go out and add a big-time scorer at the deadline. What did they do? They added Jeff Petrie, and they added a guy, added a big player like Devontae Smith-Pelly, but he's not certainly a natural offensive player. So it's identifying your team at present and figuring out how best to give yourself a shot now, while also, you know, retaining some of your players long term, your young players long term, and building.
Richie, and it's a good observation that you make that they didn't go out at the trade deadline and get a top scorer. What did they do last year? They went out and they got Thomas Vanek, who, as we know, vanished in the playoffs.
So you're saying Vanek vanished?
Well, he was terrible. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens got to the Eastern Conference Finals not because of Thomas Vanek.
Sure.
It was a lot of other players that were the reason. And he was awful. Yeah, and to me, I mean, you're talking about a defense led by P.K. Subban and Andrei Markov, and I know Sergei Gonchar is probably in the last year or second last year of his career here, but he's been that nice veteran presence, and, you know, Jeff Petrie, as we talked to Pat Hickey about, has been a nice addition, and, you know, Emelin's a physical defenseman, and, you know, Gilbert's, you know, he struggled at times, but he's a pretty decent defenseman. This team, I agree with Rich, I think, you know, if you would have gone out and got a rental player, for example, I don't think they need that. And I agree with you, Rich. Look at the New Jersey Devils. They started building their team around Martin Brodeur in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of teams said, well, or pardon me, you know, critics said that the reason why Brodeur was a function of the system, I always disagreed with that. Brodeur was an excellent goaltender, and they built their team around him. And you've seen that time after time. You've seen that with Pekka-Rinne in Nashville.
Absolutely.
I mean, Nashville can't do what they do if they don't have Shea Weber and Pekka-Rinne.
Right. Sure.
The new blueprint in the NHL, Drew, is how you build your team around a good goalie and a good defenseman. You want me to go on and on? Jonathan Quick and Drew Doughty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Duncan Keith and Corey Crawford. You can go on and on and on and on.
How did the Jets match up against the Montreal Canadiens then tomorrow? We saw them. The Jets and the Habs played much earlier in the year in Montreal. And if I recall correctly, I believe the Habs were the victors in that contest.
You have a team that can really skate. So, I mean, the Habs are going to come into town and usually be able to skate circles around you, or at least challenge you with their speed. On the outside, which the Jets have been doing a good job of keeping teams to the outside, but when they beat you to the outside, they're able to penetrate the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a concern, is the speed. Now, the Jets skate pretty well. The Jets are going to want to be a physical team, as they usually have been this year, really change their identity, and exert that pressure on the forecheck against the team in Montreal that, you know, Pat Hickey mentioned. Subban and Markov aren't the most physical, and Yemelin and Petrie can be physical, and then the third pairing guy, whether it be, I think, is it Patarin? I don't know a lot about him, and then Nathan Beaulieu, I don't know a ton about him either, but the point is they're, you know, younger defensemen you're going to put pressure on as a third pairing. So you're looking at a team that's fast and skilled. Okay, the puck moves pretty quickly. They move pretty quickly. And in reality, you're getting a huge break. And their MVP really of the league this year, we think, is not going to be playing. So some chances they take may end up in the back of the net when they usually wouldn't. Matchup-wise, if you're looking at it that way, I think this is a matchup that works pretty well for the Jets. Enstrom and Myers aren't going to be challenged physically. And I think that certainly works in their favor. It'll be more of a motion game. So I think you'll probably see Enstrom and Myers up against the Darnay, Pacioretty, and Parento line. If that's how the Habs go with it, I think you'll probably see Trouba and Stewart against the more physical line of Galchenyuk and Gallagher and Plekanec. Galchenyuk and Gallagher being the more physical players on that line. And then you'll see, you know, the third line is what, Ehlers and De La Rose and Smith-Pelle. So that'll be your third line. What'll go sum up, you know, which will go up against that Party Harrison if Byfuglien isn't back, and we don't know if he'll be back.
Yeah, they're maybes. Both Brian Little and Dustin Byfuglien are definitely maybes for tomorrow night's game. We won't know more until tomorrow morning's morning skate.
Wasn't that a movie? Definitely maybe.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure it sounds like a romantic love story you would have seen.
Yeah, maybe. Remus, you see it?
No.
Going back to
Remus actually has seen it, right?
I've never seen it, but it's with Ryan Reynolds and Isla Fisher.
Who's Isla Fisher?
Isla Fisher is the redhead from Wedding Crashers.
She's married to Sacha Baron Cohen.
Oh, yes. That's right.
I didn't realize we were on the red carpet, but I guess we are. So, you know,
quickly,
but,
before we're up against the break.
You know, going back to the first segment, Drew, when you were asking us about, you know, did the Jets really miss Little and Byfuglien and, you know, not to mention Perreault. Of course, they missed them yesterday, right? But it would really be a significant boost to get them back, I think, at the beginning of this homestand and then get them into the first game. Because as we mentioned, when you have Vancouver coming in next weekend, you've got a bit of a break there. So absolutely, when you put a guy in like Buff and, you know, the Montreal Canadiens.
I will say this quickly. We've got to go break. Yes, I'm going to interrupt. I apologize for that. Putting back all three or four of these guys at one time makes me a little bit uneasy.
Especially when the team wins five games in a row.
Just all four at one time is always something, you know. We talked to Bill Waters on the trade deadline show about putting a bunch of healthy players in the Leafs in the playoffs.
Who's the fourth? Sherratt?
Yeah. Sherratt. I'm saying if you put all four of these guys in at one time, certainly they make you better. No question about it. But that's a lot of chemistry changes at one time.
We'll find out as the players get healthy, whether or not it's tomorrow. We'll find out in the morning during morning skate. Let's head to break. When we come back, Slava Malamud is going to join us. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's a columnist with Le Journal de Montréal, and he also writes for the International Ice Hockey Federation, Slava Malamud. Slava, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Good evening.
Slava, obviously brought you on to talk about the latest news involving former New Jersey Devil, former Atlanta Thrasher Ilya Kovalchuk. There's rumors that he's eyeing a return to North America for the 2016-17 season. Do you put much stock in that talk, or do you think that Ilya Kovalchuk is still going to be KHL-bound for the next number of years?
Oh, one thing I have learned about putting stock into Ilya Kovalchuk's rumors is that, yeah, you're probably better off believing them, because I was probably on the side of the debate that he's not going to go back to the KHL. Back 2 years ago, I thought that when he was saying all these things during the lockout, I thought that he was just blowing hot air and just playing into the KHL's media campaign. The PR campaign, but he did wind up returning, and that kind of took me by surprise. I did not think he was genuine about that. So now that my first impulse is to not believe these rumors, especially that, you know, partially they emanate from his sister, who is not known really for speaking a lot of sense, but knowing that, you know, Ilya is full of surprises, I can actually see that there is a lot of sense in perhaps returning rather sooner than later, especially seeing how volatile the financial situation is in Russia right now, and in the KHL in particular.
Slava, as you mentioned, it's unknown whether Ilya Kovalchuk will come back, but if Ilya Kovalchuk did decide to come back to the NHL during the 2016-17 season, how big of a blow would that be to the KHL considering his superstar status?
It probably would be. But returning in 2016-2017 would mean that he would have to come back to the Devils. That's the one loophole in the whole retirement deal. He would have to rejoin his old team, and I'm not sure whether he wants to do that or whether they're going to try to to do some creative and have him sign and unretire and trade and get traded somewhere else. But those concerns aside, yeah, the KHL is going to feel it for sure. I think the KHL knows that it's going to feel a sting of the financial situation in Russia this year and in years to come. I think they are prepared to deal with it. As a matter of fact, there were rumors circulating today that SKA St. Petersburg, which is Kovalchuk's current team, is prepared to sign Alexander Radulov from CSKA Moscow this offseason. Now, of course, St. Petersburg and Moscow are going to play each other in the Western Conference Finals. The series begins tomorrow, and a lot of people took it as, you know, another part of gamesmanship. You know, SKA is just trying to play with their opponents' heads. But knowing how much money they get, you know, that rumor is easy to believe. And whom are they trying to replace with Radulov? That's the question a lot of people are asking. Is that Viktor Tikhonov, who is ready to rejoin the NHL next mm-hmm. year, or is it potentially trying to fill the gap that Kovalchuk might leave? And, you know, Kovalchuk might even rejoin the NHL this upcoming season if he wanted to, if St. Petersburg was ready to terminate the contract, which, you know, in the KHL, there is no guaranteed contract, so the contract can be terminated at any time. So if they suddenly found out that they are simply no longer able to support the kind of demand that star of his status has, or it just no longer makes financial sense to them, sure, they could do that. And, you know, Kovy has never hidden the fact that he is all about the money. People in Russia call him Manichuk. You know, that's his thing. I mean, he left the NHL because he was going to get paid more and play 30% fewer games in Russia and be a huge hero and probably forge a political career. But now money-wise, Russia does not look so attractive anymore. And if he can get in with a contender in the NHL and coast to a championship, why not?
How has he performed, Slav, like, not following the KHL closely? How has he performed this year? And performance-wise, is his game at a level where he'd be able to make the transition back to the NHL quite easily or take some time? I mean, you know, he's a guy who is, obviously he's got a great shot, but he's a good skater too. And now he's 31 and, you know, it's a few more years since he played in the National Hockey League. How do you think he'd fare?
Well, when he left, people in the NHL probably who aren't used to following Russian hockey probably mm-hmm. would have thought, oh, this guy is going to score 2 points a game in the KHL. He's going to be their top scorer by far. He's going to be their Alex Ovechkin times two. Has not really happened. He hasn't won a league scoring title. And this year, the guys who are at the top of the food chain in the KHL as far as scoring, you know, you look at guys like Alex Radulov, who's obviously also a star quality player. You have a guy like Steve Moses, an American guy who's, you know, only the most hard-nosed hockey fans know about. Mm-hmm. Kovalchuk isn't there. I mean, he's been hurt a lot, for sure. He's also on a team of superstars, of KHL-level superstars in St. Petersburg, so he has to share the puck a little bit. It's not just all him. He has been brilliant at times. He began this season extremely well, very hot. But I don't think he's any longer able to carry the kind of load. I mean, you remember the last time when he led the Devils to the Stanley Cup final, mm-hmm. doing it with a bad back. It was amazing what he did. I don't think he's up to that kind of heroics anymore. His mm-hmm. body just isn't carrying the load as well. I think he's still going to be a very productive player in the NHL if he comes back, depending on when he does it. Is he going to be back to his 27-year-old self? No, probably not. He'll be productive. On a good team with good teammates, with a good center, he's going to be a productive player. Is he not Alex Ovechkin type, but a good player for sure.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. Our guest is Slava Malamud. He's a columnist with Le Journal de Montréal, talking about Russian hockey players and Russia, the KHL in general. And Slava, given that you're talking to a Winnipeg radio station, we are obligated to ask you, of course, about Alex Burmistrov. A lot of chatter that he's going to leave the KHL and come back to the Winnipeg Jets, who currently own his rights, his NHL rights. Is it a foregone conclusion in your mind that Alex Burmistrov is going to return to the NHL after this season?
It's definitely true that he wants to. Does he want to be back with Winnipeg? I'd be a little skeptical there. I mean, there was obviously no love lost with the previous coach. Whether he's whether he wants to play for Paul Maurice, I don't know. Given a choice, he'd much rather start elsewhere. You know how for hockey players, a change of climate. It's not necessarily about Winnipeg not being desirable, but it's probably simply because you might want to have a change of climate, get with some new teammates. Maybe you can rekindle your career. If it's just the Jets and nobody else, I think he would still be willing to give it a chance, to give it a try. I think all in all, the Jets will probably be better off finding somebody who is interested and letting the kid go and getting something for him, because I don't think he really has any particular desire to be a Jet long term. But the fact that he wants to return to an NHL, that's for sure.
Slava, we wanted to ask you about something that you tweeted out, I believe it was about a week ago, from Vladislav Tretiak, of course, the great Russian goaltender from the 1972 Summit Series, and he's the president of the Ice Hockey Federation in Russia. He said that the KHL is not going to interrupt their season in 2016-17 for the World Cup, which starts in August. Does that just show you that the World Cup really isn't taken seriously by countries like Russia?
I think that the Russians probably understand that they will not be able to win it. And understanding that, they're trying to downplay it. Right now, and not just right now, in Russia, hockey has always been a political game, first and foremost. It was a game where where the Russians were supposed to show the world, and in particular North America, that they can be better. And right now, they're trying this type of political sporting and gamesmanship where they're gonna hype up the world championship, where they definitely have a great chance to win every single year, and they're gonna downplay the World Cup. Now they can't downplay the Olympics, obviously, but the Olympics are only once in every 4 years, and you can immediately erase the disappointment with winning the world championship. So I think that's more about that, and it's also about the fact that they probably don't expect to have enough quality players in the KHL by 2016 anyway to may have a major impact on the Russian lineup. It's probably going to be 5 or 6 players. And I think the KHL thinks that they can probably release those players from their clubs and continue the season without them. The clubs obviously going to grumble, but in Russia, the Ice Hockey Federation holds the trump card as far as that. They can pull the player out of the league whenever they want. But I think they feel pretty comfortable that their NHL, mostly NHL-based team, is still going to be the best team they can field anyway.
Slava, you mentioned earlier Steve Moses, and there's a smaller American player who's enjoyed success this year in the KHL. There are some other names that we're now hearing that could be coming to the National Hockey League who haven't played in the NHL before. Can you maybe give us some names that listeners might expect to hear over the next few weeks, months, that might be coming over in the next period of time?
Well, how about Mike Keenan? I think he's ready. I think the old Iron Mike is ready to get back into the swing of things. He really got the taste for winning again with Metallurg Magnitogorsk. I think he really showed a lot of people that he can still coach at the top level and be very successful. And it was quite a challenge. He took a team that is used to playing this very Russian style of hockey, and without high scoring, high speed, lots of passing, and without really changing anything fundamental about them, he taught them toughness and playoff type of NHL playoff tough hockey and perseverance, and that's quite a feat to pull off. Now, he wasn't successful this year, but last year he did very well with them. So I think he might try to come back. As far as Russian players who haven't, I mean, I think Prokhorkin from CSKA Moscow is ready to join the Los Angeles Kings next year. There's Artemi Panarin from CSKA St. Petersburg, who was an unbelievable revelation this year in the KHL. He definitely wants to try himself in the National Hockey League. He was a big star for Russia in one of the World Junior Championships recently. I don't think he was not drafted in the NHL, so he's going to be a free agent. And those clubs with good scouting systems probably know about him and probably are trying to get the inside track on signing him. As far as North Americans coming back, most of North Americans playing in Russia right now, all of them are, you know, glorified AHLers or NHL third and fourth liners. I don't think Steve Moses has the body to play in NHL. He's perfect for European rinks. He's a small, your typical undersized type of North American player who can thrive in Europe, but not really cut out to be an NHL player. And that's the truth for most North Americans out there.
Slava, we'll let you go on this final question. You mentioned Viktor Tikhonov earlier, former first-round pick of the Phoenix Coyotes, Arizona Coyotes now. You mentioned he's looking to come back into the NHL. He only really played that one season in Phoenix, and that was about 6-7 years ago, 2008-2009. Why is he better suited now for the NHL than he was a number of years ago?
He's a completely different player now. He is. He can score. He can create. He's really discovered his confidence. And I think he was always a late bloomer. He was nothing special in the KHL either until about 2-3 years ago. And then he's just really blossomed into a tremendous player. I saw him at the World Championship last year in Minsk. And that's the first time I really managed to see him for a long period of time in a while. And he was just off the hook. He was by far the best player in Russia, and that's the team that had Malkin and Ovechkin. He had his moment of truth in Minsk. And whether that's going to translate to the small ice in North America, time will show. But, you know, it makes sense at the age of 26 right now. He's going to turn 27 in May. It makes sense for him to try it. That's his one chance to try it. He'll always have a big money back in Russia if he doesn't pan out. But I think right now he's definitely not going to be the same player that left Phoenix all those years ago. When was it? I mean, he played in the AHL, I think, until 2011 in San Antonio. He's not the same player now. He should be able to. I would expect him to be successful.
Slava Malamud is a columnist with Le Journal de Montréal. He also works for the International Ice Hockey Federation. Slava, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
No problem. Thank you.
Take care, Slava. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
20 minutes past 7 o'clock. Welcome back to NHL Midweek. Big thanks to Slava Malamud and a big thanks, of course, to Pat Hickey before him for joining us here on the program. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. This week at Rumors, Darren Rose, you know him from Mr. D, you know him from Match Game. There's very few tickets available, only Friday, Late Show, and tomorrow, I believe. So get your tickets quickly, rumorscomedyclub.com, and of course check out the great roster of upcoming comedians, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, some signings, some news, etc. from around the NHL. We start in Vancouver, where they re-signed defenseman Chris Tanev to a 5-year, $22.25 million contract, salary cap hit of $4.45 million per season. Chris Tanev, probably not a household name when it comes to most casual NHL fans. What are your thoughts on this contract for the Canucks defenseman?
Well, we should mention, I mean, he broke in with his pro career at the Moose.
That's right.
So if you're a fan of the Moose, you would remember Chris Tanev being part of the... He was undrafted. Mm-hmm. He was part of the Vancouver Canucks organization back when the Moose were here.
Yeah.
You know, I know that...
Did he play for the Moose?
Yeah. But Richie, Jets fans obviously saw him play last night for the Canucks, and he's a guy to me that's underrated. And if you look at his offensive,
his agent must think he's underrated too with this contract.
Well, I know, you know, that was what kind of came out, and people were criticizing the contract and all of that. But I mean, that's for you, Richie. To me, he's a good defenseman, and the offensive numbers are not there as if you compare him to some of the other defensemen that the Canucks have, Alex Edler or Jason Garrison, who is of course course, now on the Tampa Bay Lightning, but very solid defenseman. And I know, you know, you can say that, you know, the block shots are overblown and all that, but he's a good defensive defenseman. And I think, you know, at 25 years old, the Vancouver Canucks are taking away his unrestricted free agency, Richie. So again, the numbers might not be
three
there.
3 years, right? It's a 5-year deal. So it's, and he's played in the league 5 years. So 3 years.
Mm-hmm. But a very solid defenseman, though. And you watch him play yesterday, and he's physical, and he's not a guy that's ever going to score 50 points in the NHL. He might get you 25 or 30.
He's got 43 career NHL points in 216 games. So definitely defensive-minded.
Yeah, and you want that. He's a shutdown defenseman. The Canucks like him. He's become a bona fide top-pairing defenseman in the NHL. So, you know, the signing makes sense to me.
I just don't know what the agents are thinking here. The long-term deals probably hurt the game more than anything because the movement becomes stagnant because there's so many big deals and they're untradeable. From a NHL fan perspective, the more long-term deals you have, the less these guys, less movement you see between teams, and it's harder, you know, you get locked in with these same squads and there's less movement. I think it's less interesting. But in terms of Tanev, I mean, Tanev is getting you. He's not playing on the power play at all, guys, right? Nope. So when you talk about his points, sure, he's not a great offensive player, so he's not going to play on the power play. And you say, well, then he doesn't have points, so he's not in the power play. But at the end of the day, he is a stay-at-home defenseman. He's solid. He's very smart.
Yep.
He makes good decisions.
Yep.
He doesn't waste a ton of energy. Thinking is the name of his game. He has progressed. That's something that they obviously are very happy with in Vancouver, is that he gets better every year.
Yep.
And that's a good sign for the 26 through 31 years where they signed him for. I thought the deal overall was a big discount to the team. And if he's happy there and he knows he's worth more, then that's fine. I have no issue with that. I mean, jokes aside about the agent jokes, you know, Nick Bjugstad, TJ Brody, to me, those guys all took deals that were below market. Having said that, if they're comfortable there and have made an informed decision, or even if they haven't made it, so long as they've been providing the information, they've made their own decision, then so be it. We can't blame them for taking too much money and then blame them for taking too little.
So you think he left money on the table rather than...
There's no question in my mind he left money on the table. 2 years you put him on the UFA market with all these long-term deals out there. He's one of the few, I don't know, I haven't looked at the free agents for 2 years from now, but he's good. He'd break the bank, Drew. He'd break the bank. He'd be like he's going to be like a Mark Stahl on the market, that kind of a player. Gonna break if Mark Stahl hit the market, it's gonna break the bank. So it's a good deal for Vancouver, and kind of similar to the deals. And Lawrence Gilman does the contract work there, and I'm not sure how much of a role he had in this, and Jim Benning in this, but they were able to get a lot of their players years ago, Kessler, Sedin's, on below market deals. I think this is again in line with that.
Yeah, and you look at what the New York Islanders did with Travis Hamonic.
You put him on the list.
That's a real steal. Travis Hamonic, I think, is a step above Chris Tanev. No offense to Chris Tanev, because Hamonic, we know he's Manitoba boy. He's a really good defenseman. But I think you're right, Richie, that, you know, and again, you're more of the contract guy than I am, but these general managers love this type of deal because you take away those UFA years. And not only do you take the UFA years away as far as your ability to negotiate, Richie, but you take them off the UFA market. Jeff Petrie, good defenseman, but, I mean, he's going to be one of the kind of most sought-after UFA free agents, and I would say he's not even a top 50 defenseman in the NHL. So I mean, and that's what you're seeing. The trend is to sign players in between the ages of even as low as 23
entry level
to 27,
deal,
28. Yeah.
Entry level deal, boom, as many years. And this is a little bit different. He's played on two. He's played 5 years, so it's different than entry level deal.
Yeah,
he's an older player. He's 25, and as you mentioned, undrafted free agent, right? So I mean, that plays a factor in it as well, but I just think this is a good deal. He's not as physical, certainly, as he is a guy like Hamonic. Maybe you think long-term that even helps him a little bit more. I think the Canucks are just happy to lock down a right-side guy. BX is getting older. Just a really smart defenseman who can play in your top four, play in your top two, and can be trusted.
Plays 246 on the penalty kill per game.
Can be
average.
Trusted. I mean, every team want a guy like this. So it's a great contract. I mean, that contract, you're going to put him under five for the... That's a good deal.
Moving to Arizona, where they've announced that as current assistant general manager and goaltending coach Sean Burke has
best
been
part about that deal quickly is that if he doesn't perform, the term and the money doesn't really hurt you that much. You know, when a guy like Kessel or Phaneuf are making so much money and they have so much term, both of those things hurt you. They're making more years, more money. so he doesn't play as well. Maybe he's worth $2.5 million, $3 million. Well, that's not that far off from what he's actually making.
Sure. Yeah, we should also mention Chris Tanev, I believe at one point was before Manitoba Moose, a year or two before, he was thinking about giving up hockey.
Yeah, he said that.
Because he wasn't drafted, and you know, he wasn't sure where he was going to play. So, you know, I love those stories.
Sean Burke, currently...
Jerry better watch his job with a promotion like that.
Currently the goaltending coach in Arizona. He's assistant to general manager in Arizona. He's been granted permission.
He's a guest of the show.
Yes, former guest of the show earlier this year. Been granted permission by the Coyotes to speak about management gigs with other organizations. Mm-hmm. You surprised by this decision? A lot of people had Sean Burke sort of earmarked as an up-and-coming executive in the NHL.
Well, it depends on the position. I mean, sure, Don Maloney wants to give him permission because, I mean, he wants to be GM.
Yeah.
Right?
But, what he said is that sort of when they brought in Darcy Regier to be the second in command behind Don Maloney, the writing was on the wall for him, sort of, that was the glass ceiling he wasn't going to break through in Arizona.
I don't know. I mean, Drew, because Dom, I don't know if that's true. Don Maloney and Darcy Regier have a relationship dating back to the New York Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if one goes, the other one stays. So I'm not sure about that. Maybe there's another voice there, and maybe that's what it was. And Darcy Regier obviously has a ton of experience in Buffalo for those many years, but maybe it's just a personality clash that we're unaware of. I mean, Sean Burke's known to be pretty opinionated, and he's obviously done great work with Netminders. I think he'll certainly find a place in a front office role similar to maybe, you know, Rob Blake and a lot of the guys you see now who are in hockey roles, and whether it be kind of a guy like Joe Sakic really running the show. But a former player, and Trevor Linden is a little more of a presidential role. So we'll see. But certainly he'll be coveted. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, here's the quote from Burke. Quote, "I wanted to manage from the moment I retired. Coaching is good because it gives you an additional avenue of experience being in that dressing room every day. But when you stay in that role too long, it becomes more difficult to where you want to go." So he's obviously wanted to be in a front office role as opposed to a role as an assistant coach or a goaltending coach.
He was also pleasantly, I thought, forthright when he appeared on our show, whatever it was, a few months ago, and talking about the team and their poor performance draft-wise. Maybe he doesn't believe that the future of the organization is as bright as some do because he doesn't think that the guys in place right now are going to take him the right direction. There are many factors that could be at play here.
Right, and yeah, and I don't think it'll be long before he's either assistant general manager or general manager. That's usually the kind of career trajectory. You look at Kevin Cheveldayoff, and you go up and down. You know, usually don't just step right into the general manager position unless you're someone of high profile, even Joe Sakic. But Joe Sakic spent time with the Colorado Avalanche, learning the role. And I imagine a guy like Marty Brodeur, who just retired, might want to also even aspire to be a general manager or an assistant general manager one day. It's not something that you retire and then all of a sudden 1 or 2 years you step into that role. But Sean Burke, I mean, he did a great job with Devan Dubnyk as a goalie coach, but he obviously sees an opportunity for himself elsewhere. And you can't fault him. And again, his track record's great with Hockey Canada. He's done a lot of work with Hockey Canada.
Sure.
And he's been with the Coyotes now for a while. So, he's one of those up-and-comers. And Brad Treliving was another guy who was an up-and-comer. And, you know, he saw the opportunity in Calgary and he took it.
Absolutely. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about some potential coaching changes as the 2014-15 NHL season begins to wind down. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290 on this 25th day of March. This segment is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me.
Didn't you have your own saucer competition? No, because Jacob Trouba was at Royal Sports 2 weeks ago now.
Yeah.
There was a saucer pass competition. I
it was right after that Tampa game, the Sunday after that Tampa win.
I heard Drew was just tossing saucers around the workplace.
I was actually I was just drinking saucers of milk like a cat is what I was doing. You know, I thought I only drink my milk out of a saucer.
Had some high tea at noon with a Mr. Newman.
With a Mr. Newman, indeed, of course. Welcome back to the program. I'm going to talk about some of the potential coaching changes throughout the NHL. There's a number of playoff teams, about seven teams currently that are out of the playoffs that, you know, looking around, looking through the standings, that are really, you know, sort of viable candidates, I think, for potential coaching changes. We'll start with the worst team in the NHL. That's the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, Ted Nolan's going to get fired. Pretty sure.
Do you think he's done a bad job this year with the team? Or is just
I don't think he's done a very good job. I don't think he's a very good coach.
Is this his last kick at the can of coaching in the NHL?
It took
him a long time to get back into the NHL.
You never know, but I don't think he's done his greatest work here, to be honest.
Richie, you could argue that, you know, the Buffalo Sabres weren't going to make the playoffs even if Ted Nolan was the greatest coach in the world.
For sure.
But he probably could have got them a few more points. Like if any team, and again, I hate the word tanking, but if any team is tanking, it's the Buffalo Sabres.
And fair point, Izzy. I mean, if he's been put in a difficult position, he's been giving hardly a netminder, mm-hmm. and he's been given a team that's really not very good at all. I just find that there's no identity at all. I mean, are they trying to be an offensive team? Are they trying to be a defensive team? Are they just playing five guys separately? Kind of looks more like the latter than anything else.
Yeah, and they work hard. I mean, the Buffalo Sabres work hard, but players on that team, a guy that comes to mind that's had a terrible year is Cody Hodgson. And, you know, has he gotten the most out of some of the younger players like Nikita Zadorov or Mikhail Grigorenko, who I know, you know, these guys are in tough situations, Richie, where they're on a team that it's not going anywhere. At least they're not going anywhere right now. But
when you're a young guy, you got to prove yourself. So, yep. I mean, I don't know. I know it's a tough environment. Clearly, you can see with Stafford and Myers' play that it's a lot easier to play elsewhere. So I appreciate that. I think he does factor into that, though. How much? I don't know, but I think he will be let go at the end of the season. Tim Murray, I think, has a vision here, guys. I think he's going to change it up in the offseason.
And Ted Nolan wasn't Tim Murray's guy.
Exactly right.
Connor McDavid goes to Buffalo. Has that become one of the most attractive jobs on the market?
Oh, 100%.
Was that Darren Dreger was on H&L today.
It's not only that, Drew. Just Connor McDavid. It's you got the draft next year there. You've got Harbor Center, which I'm told is a beautiful facility, and they're going
to
start.
Who's willing to spend money?
You've got the ownership that's got lots of money there. Mm-hmm. This Harbor Center they're going to have the draft combine there. So I mean, it's what's going on in Buffalo as a whole, and you know, Evander Kane is there now. You know, and again, I know Evander Kane
is a pro or a con
around this. You know,
Zadorov, Ristolainen, they've first got round pick this year.
Grigorenko is still
two first round,
very young.
Well, aside from the one you're referring,
there's
to
a lot of
McDavid
good pieces there. I mean, there really is. There's a lot of good pieces in Buffalo. So obviously, yes, Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel, if they go there, they're going to build their team around one of those players. I mean, I know people think that these guys are being hyped up, but if you listen to Craig Button or any of the other scouts and what they're saying, I mean, these guys are the real deal. They're not just, I mean, sure, there is that element that in Canada, we hear about these guys for 4 years before they're drafted, but you watch, you know, what Connor McDavid has done leading up to, you know, the injury and after the injury and all the points he put up in the OHL.
I mean, he's going to be the real deal. It's not really a question, right?
Yeah.
To me, generational
talent.
I mean, you see it with your own eyes and you listen to what scouts say, and they say that he's the best player, he's the best prospect since Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Well, Darren Dreger, as I said, he was on H&L today and he speculated, and strictly want to stress the word speculated, that, you know, if Ted Nolan leaves in Buffalo, and we expect that he will, and if Mike Babcock ends up being available.
Mike Harrington said that on our show weeks ago, didn't he?
You might have a better memory than I.
Drew, but yeah, Mike Harrington said that he expects them to go after Mike Babcock. That's if I recall correctly.
It could very well be. That's when Mike was on when I was away that weekend. I mean, and like we said, they got an ownership group who's willing to spend money. You know, got probably one of the wealthiest owners in the entire NHL.
I would bet Edmonton. I mean, Todd Nelson's done a better job there. Edmonton, Buffalo, Toronto. Those teams will all be peeking in on Babcock for sure at Toronto number one.
You think Edmonton too?
I think Todd Nelson is an interesting situation as someone who might be back in Edmonton. I'm not saying that, you know, that's a guarantee, but to me, he's, you know, we saw the Oilers obviously before they played the Jets and were beat 4-1 by the Jets. They had they went on a 2-0-2 run and they beat the Philadelphia Flyers before that.
The Oilers.
So yeah, I mean,
Babcock's likely going to want some kind of personnel say. That's my opinion. So, I mean, that might shape where he goes. Does he go to Toronto and have a say with Brendan Shanahan? That might be appealing.
They're going to have 12 general managers in Toronto at the same time?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Patrick Waugh has the same personnel in Colorado.
Sure.
Mike Babcock might say in Edmonton, I want personnel. And they might say, you know, you can have whatever you want. We have a new building coming up. We have a rich owner. Mm-hmm. We need to change things. And, you know, Edmonton looks like a big mess, but then you look at what they have. They're going to have the pick this year. Darnell Nurse, Nugent Hopkins, Eberle, Hall, sure. Yakupov. You think that's... I still think that's a very appealing job.
And Draisaitl, of course, also.
Draisaitl. So yeah. Jokes aside, I mean, you get there with that crew. Owner yeah. wants to spend money. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. the, you know, Babcock's from Saskatchewan.
Too. Well, we had Dave Jameson on the show from our TSN affiliate in Edmonton on Saturday show, Ezzy, and he said that he thought that Todd Nelson had done enough to deserve to get the interim tag.
I think he's done a pretty good job. Under the circumstances,
I don't disagree.
They've basically, you know, taken...
But Mike Babcock's best coach in the league.
No, I'm not comparing the two, Rich. I'm just saying, I think when Todd Nelson replaced Dallas Eakins, it was kind of like, okay, this is interim. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Todd Nelson, I believe he was an assistant with the Thrashers, too, as well, wasn't he?
I don't remember.
But he's had some NHL experience.
Didn't watch a lot of Thrashers hockey either.
Well, yeah, no, I don't think a lot of people were watching a lot of Thrashers. But he's a guy that I think has, you know, Richie talks about identity. I agree. Watch the Buffalo Sabres. They don't have much of an identity. And I think the Oilers are trying to find an identity in a year in which it's almost impossible because you have so many players leaving. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. The Oilers, one thing is for sure, the Oilers, they have no problem firing a head coach. Yep.
That's very true. I mean, the truth is, you know, Todd Nelson, I think he has done a good job, but it was almost hard to do a worse job than what Dallas Eakins did there.
That's fair, but, you know,
harsh,
look
fair.
For example, Richie, I know me and you disagree about Nail Yakupov. Yakupov's played a lot better under Todd Nelson.
Well, because I like him, I said.
That's right.
Yeah, so we agree on that.
You agree on which part?
I agree. Well, I like Yakupov more than Ezzy does. And well, again, Ezzy says that he's playing better lately, which I would agree
well,
with.
Under Todd Nelson. I think, again, you know, talking about Dallas Eakins, there was a lot of, apparently he was just fixated on this
course,
the possession
numbers,
and all
yeah.
that. But, I mean, Edmonton, one thing's for sure. I mean, they got to stick with a coach for longer than 1 or 2 years.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Mike Babcock's, I think I said this on the show, probably early in the season, Drew. I don't remember the exact number, but I think he's probably going to get somewhere around 5 years, $25 million.
And he deserves
here.
It. Mm-hmm. He really does. I agree with
you. I agree with you, Ezzy. I mean, if you have the money to spend, these owners are making money.
Well, would you rather give 5 years, $25 million to Mike? But who's going to have a bigger impact? 5 years, $25 million to Mike Babcock or 5 years, $25 million to a third line center?
Mike Babcock.
Mike Babcock's the answer to that question. And, you know,
depends on who the player is.
Of but course,
yes,
but
yes.
For the most part, I mean, you know, Babcock's going to be, you know, he's a difference maker
as a head coach.
He's
the modern day Scotty Bowman. I mean, you're talking about not only is he one of the best coaches in the NHL right now. He's one of the best coaches of all time. He really is.
I agree with you there. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the other teams. We'll talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. Lots more to come. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. This is NHL Midweek.
Feeling lucky, Drew?
I am feeling lucky. As a reminder, of course, 12 noon Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this fine station. We'll get you ready for Sunday's Jets-Blackhawks game back at MTS Center. And, of course, review tomorrow night's Jets-Habs game, key matchup for the Winnipeg Jets.
Early Saturdays after that, right?
Yeah, then the last two Saturdays are our only early Saturdays of the season. Two straight 8 a.m. starts. That'll be, I believe, the 4th of April and then the 11th of April as the Jets play after Saturday afternoon games on both of those days. So 8 a.m. for 2 weeks from now. Richard?
Do your read before I want to tell a story.
Okay, then it's story time here on NHL Midweek. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Knott Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at knottautocorp.com. Richard, story time with Richard Pollock.
So we played for a great cause, by the way. There's no cheers and jeers this week, but you're allowed to do charity event for Richard Tapper, a friend of ours who passed away a few years ago.
Had a show on the station,
of course, called The Doc and the Jock. Great guys, you know, it's
with Abikon.
Certainly, yeah, with Abikon, yeah. Who was there as well at the charity floor hockey event. Certainly miss Richard, and that was the purpose of the event. I want to tell a story from we played a bunch of games, and one of the games we played was against Richard's family members, and including some of his nephews.
Okay.
So they were, you know, range probably from 7 till 10 to 12 around there. And so we played floor hockey against them. In this game, I played net, and they were able to score a couple goals against me.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up we went to a shootout. So
I like where this one's going already.
In the shootout, I played goal. I was, you know, I was tried to stay fairly stagnant, but made a couple saves. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Push comes to shove, you got to win the game.
Well,
go on.
Anyhow, so our team ended up scoring a goal in the second round of the shootout. So there was playing against
7-year-olds.
Yeah, 7, 8 to 12.
Well, we should mention that there were adults on the team, the dads of the kids on the team as well.
Hold on. So it gets really good. So after two rounds, we're up 1-0. We shot first. So we called Big Daddy Ezzy's number over here.
Mm-hmm.
And Ezzy marches up. Keep in mind the goaltender's probably 9 or 10 years old.
Okay.
He's really good netminder. He played really hard.
Yeah, still 10 years old.
Yeah, 10 years old. And Ezzy comes in on him, and we think, oh, you know, what's Ezzy going to do? Is he going to fire kind of a shot?
Mm-hmm. Or just bowl over the goalie try to go through him.
Ezzy comes in on Richard's 8 to 10-year-old nephew, pulls the Zhamnov deke, scores, wins the game. Yeah, unbelievable. Ezzy's face. I was driving home yesterday, and I burst out laughing in the car just thinking about it. I called Ezzy, and he asked me, why'd you call me? I said, because I thought of you scoring a goal on the kid, and burst out laughing because you scored the Zhamanov goal. And then Ezzy turned around and had that big smile on his face. Oh, it was hilarious.
Well, okay, I should mention, by the way, before the game started, I didn't realize that one of the teams was going to have these younger kids. I think he might have been younger than 10. He might have been 7 or 8.
He might have been.
The younger he gets, the less credible you get for your goal.
Yeah, but I know. I mean, it was funny, and he was actually kind of upset. Yeah,
the kid was crying
after
the game.
I remember I was talking to his dad. I didn't get the kid's name, but the dad's name was Alan. He actually, before the game, said, oh, yeah, Ezra from Illegal Curve. Because I introduced myself, and he said, "Oh yeah, I'm a big fan of the show." And what I said after I scored on his kid, right? I said he's probably not a fan anymore. But no, it was fun, and I mean the kids, as Richie said, I mean they were having a good time. They were a little upset that they didn't win, but I thought, hey, I might as well try to win this. We ended up winning the tournament, by the way.
Congratulations!
Which is just for it's just for fun. But again, great cause. We got to give a shout out to Dave Manuk, a good friend of Jordan. Richard Tapper, Jordan Farber, and Daniel Sprints. They did a great job with that. Raised a lot of money for a good cause. That was fun. I mean, and Richard's brother Adam Pollock was also on the team, and he was saying, that kid's going to learn a lesson, that you got to make the saves there.
Now, Drew,
you make the saves there. Yeah,
now, Drew, you have a story. Apparently,
I do have a story. I would have, of course, normally participated in this event with you guys, and was sort of disappointed I wasn't able to. But I was going to Book of Mormon on Sunday. Remus was also there with his family and Leah and his brother and everybody.
Hashtag Leah,
of course. So yeah. Laura and I, my wife and I, are planned to go for a number of months. And on Friday morning, my dad calls me and he says, "We'd like to go as well to the same show as you, and we'd like, but I'm trying to buy the tickets on Ticketmaster, and for whatever reason, it's not working right now. And can you just buy them and I'll pay you back?" I say, "Sure, no problem." So I go on to Ticketmaster, and I do my thing, and I buy him the 2 tickets. And
so Sheldon can't work Ticketmaster.com?
He had a problem. The credit card that was on file, the expiry dates, and the lesson that, as you're going to see, is he needs to learn how to use Ticketmaster.com. Anyway, so they pick us up, and we go to the concert hall for the show, and Laura and I have our 2 tickets. My parents have their 2 tickets, and Laura and I walk in, and they scan our ticket, and we go in, and then I scan my ticket, and I go in, and then they scan my mom's ticket, and. And what's that about? And the usher is very polite, looks at the ticket and says, "Ma'am, your tickets were for the 1 o'clock show."
That's awesome.
I felt so bad.
Oh, that is awesome. Did you let them in anyways?
No, the show was completely sold out. They had to leave.
Wow.
So they never saw it?
No, they never saw it. There was no tickets available.
Oh my God.
But there were 2 empty seats at the 1 o'clock show, let me tell you.
That's funny.
Yeah, I felt I mean, I've done some stupid things, of course, in my life.
That's true.
My parents should never be surprised and are never surprised when I do stupid things. I felt so bad about that. You have no, I still feel bad about it right now. I can laugh about it because the alternative is really to cry. But I still feel absolutely terrible about that. You know, looking for a nice night out at the theater, and I ruined it for everybody.
I feel bad for your mom. I don't feel bad for Sheldon at all.
Why is that?
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay,
you're just, but no.
All right, what do we got here, Drew?
No, that's unfortunate because I hear it's a good show.
It was a very good show, and you know, I bought the CD for my parents. Did that make up for it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Who buys CDs anymore?
Well, they wanted to hear the songs. They wanted to hear the music.
And I actually also buy CDs.
Yeah. Arizona Coyotes. A lot of talk that Dave Tippett has an out clause, you know, at the end of the season, that he's no longer obligated to be the head coach of the Arizona Coyotes after the year is
done. Shotgun the clause?
A, would you expect him to use that clause? And B, if he does use it, where do you think he goes? And who would be a good fit to help the rebuilding Arizona Coyotes, who are, you know, quite likely to get another high draft pick this season, in addition to Max Domi and Anthony Duclair, who they got from the New York Rangers?
Henrik Samuelsson. They have some young players. You know, they have a ways to go there. You know, Drew, I almost think that coaching in Arizona would be a good place for a young coach to kind of grow with that team. And some people say, well, look at the way, you know, a guy like Dallas Eakins, who was not inexperienced NHL coaching wise, worked in Edmonton. Yeah, but there are examples of coaches that have grown, you know, with teams. And you know, Mike Babcock was a young coach when he coached in Anaheim the first time around, and granted, he left with the change of the executives there and such. But I think that might be a place for one of the younger, you know, junior coaches who are AHL coaches who have enjoyed some success. I think what happens in Detroit might, you might see things change there. I'm not sure if a guy like Ulf Samuelsson would be interested in that job. He was in Arizona, went to New York. Maybe the opening in Arizona leads him back. His son, of course, is part of the organization.
A little bit awkward if his son's there.
Maybe, yes and no. So I think Dave Tippett's where he would end up. Well, again, I think Babcock controls the whole market. If Babcock leaves Detroit, you know, does Detroit bring in McClellan? Or if Babcock leaves Detroit for Toronto, does Detroit bring in McClellan? Do they bring in their AHL guy they gave an extension to? Or if Babcock stays in Detroit, does McClellan? I think McClellan's going to be on the outs in San Jose. If Toronto's interested in him.
Yep.
If Toronto's interested in him and San Jose opens up, I mean, is that San Jose job as appealing now? Dan Bylsma, his name comes in here.
Yeah.
So it's going
to Pete DeBoer.
Pete DeBoer is also a guy.
You could make the argument that the coaching free agency and the coaching, you know, carousel is almost more interesting than the UFAs that are on the market among players.
Well, if St. Louis is an early exit, does Ken Hitchcock, I mean, what if he says, oh, I want to take a shot at Alberta. I've never, you know, that's where I'm from. I've never coached there before. Mm-hmm. And Edmonton might be. You know, again, Todd Nelson's there right now. There are a lot of moving parts here in the coaching market, and you hear a lot of rumblings of where guys might go. But a guy like Dan Bylsma, I see wanting to get into it because you don't want to be out too long. You're out too long, you lose your touch a bit. People don't, you know, don't remember how you did a good job in Pittsburgh. So I think that's something to watch. But in terms of appealing jobs, guys, I mean, the big time jobs, the Habs and we talked about the Leafs, but the Habs and the Rangers and the Hawks and I mean, those jobs aren't really up for grabs. Detroit depends, but again, Babcock might shift from one to the other. But if Mike Babcock, to me, if he's stay where you are, you got a great gig.
Sure. And an up-and-coming team as well.
New arena.
Eventually. Yeah, coming up in a number of years. That's it for this Wednesday and NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our guests Slava Malamud from the Journal de Montreal and Pat Hickey from the Montreal Gazette. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and the Auto Corp. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter, @illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is, as I mentioned, illegalcurve.com. For producer Michael Remus and analyst Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.